From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New York's Attorney General calls the state's voting laws arcane and releases a package of bills to improve it. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the continuing tension between the governor and state controller. And a Hudson Valley environmental group, an organic farm, sues the State Public Service Commission over subsidies for upstate nuclear power plants. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York State's Attorney General has released a package of bills aimed at improving what he says is the state's arcane and ridiculous voting laws that bar many potential voters from the ballot box. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Attorney General Eric Schneiderman began a statewide inquiry after his office received a record number of complaints about lack of voter access during the April presidential primary.
In New York, we have what amounts to legal voter suppression that the public is now aware of.
He says the profound and widespread issues include disappearing polling places and poorly trained poll workers turning away voters who sought affidavit ballots. Many polls that were open saw long lines and reduced hours. And he says laws that have resulted in New York's third worst voter participation in the nation and fifth worst voter registration numbers need to be changed.
Laws that make it easier for New Yorkers to register and vote are good laws. Laws that make it harder for New Yorkers to register and vote are bad laws. And in far too many cases, New York's laws fall in the latter category.
The Attorney General's recommendations include getting rid of the lengthy 6-month waiting period to change party enrollment before a primary. That rule prevented even Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's own children from voting for their father in the primary. Schneiderman also wants early voting and allowing voters to obtain and mail in absentee ballots without having to come up with a reason, essentially enacting voting by mail. He also thinks eligible voters should be automatically registered and that they should be able to register to vote on Election Day. The Attorney General was joined by numerous government reform groups, including Trevon Mayer's, with Common Cause.
Unfortunately, this past election cycle has reminded us that there are many unacceptable barriers that continue to suppress voter participation, especially in low-income and historically marginalized communities.
The state legislature has in the past resisted changes to voter access, and Schneiderman acknowledges that the current laws do benefit many incumbents who may find it easier to win with fewer new unknown voters. But he says the makeup of the Senate and Assembly are changing and may be more receptive to reforms now, especially with all of the national attention that voter access is receiving.
There's been a huge generational shift in the makeup of the legislature.
During the April primary, many supporters of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders complained that New York's strict laws shut them out of the ballot box. Schneiderman says his report found no evidence that if his proposed changes were in effect, the outcome of the primary vote would have been any different. He says Hillary Clinton had a lot of support in the state. But he says if the changes result in doubling the amount of regular voters in New York, election outcomes in the future could be very different.
That transforms our politics. I do think it would make New York's government more reflective of the people of the state of New York and of their views.
He says New York's leaders have an obligation under the state's constitution to protect people's rights, including the right to vote. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Thank you.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, a proponent of early voting for New York, is urging major reforms to the state's voting system after his voter protection hotline received a tenfold increase in the number of voter complaints from New York's primary day. It was 1,500 complaints about voter registration and the voting process, Alan.
Well, you got to give Schneiderman some credit. Here is proof that there are people with grave concerns about the way things were going. You know, I often think of the way they test drugs. You go to the FDA, they have a small class of people that they test them on, and then millions of people have to take those drugs, and then you find out what the problems are. Schneiderman has a voter hotline, which he's to be commended for, and you have hundreds or thousands of calls. It means somebody has seen something that they at least perceive to be not right. Now, some of those calls may be from angry people. We know this was an angry election, and people may see something that doesn't exist. But on the other hand, they may well see something that exists, and it may call for greater training on the part of the people who are sitting at the polls or less politicization among the poll watchers. But whatever it is, he is smart to say, okay, that's why I set this hotline up, that's why we have it, and that's why we need some changes.
From the Buffalo News, Tom DiNapoli, the state comptroller, Alan, has rejected Governor Andrew Cuomo's request to purchase a used $12.5 million helicopter for the New York State Police, furthering the tension that seems to exist between the two. The Cuomo administration officials insisted that the purchase effort for the Sikorsky is still underway and that they are in the process of answering the comptroller's questions.
Well, what we don't know is what the questions were. We do know that around the Cuomo administration, there has been some real problems with bids and the way bids are done. Look, I know Tom DiNapoli, and I know him well. And I have to tell you, this is not a guy who goes after a governor for the pure joy of doing it. That may be more on the Cuomo side. Tom DiNapoli has been a recipient of some very unpleasant warfare from Cuomo. But he is not a guy who goes around looking for trouble. And if he's raising questions, well, then those questions have to be raised. That's why we have a controller. As you probably know, Cuomo has tried to keep Tom DiNapoli from doing his job. For example, the legislature and Cuomo came up with a plan to disqualify DiNapoli from doing pre-audits on SUNY. And we know what happened as a result of that. It was a disgrace. So I have great faith in Tom DiNapoli.
Pushback from cities and states against the potential changes in the Trump administration. New York City, Alan, no longer will keep any documents filed to applicants for municipal IDs as of January in an effort to protect undocumented immigrants.
Well, David, that's why when you started with the new Homeland Security General who's going to be in charge, it really does raise a question as to whether or not this country and its governmental units, like New York City, have to have courage. Because I suspect if we go into where I think we're going, then it's going to mean that people are going to have to get their backs up, their spines straight, and say there are things we can do to protect the good people who are here. And I do think if you're going to deport, it should be reserved to a class of people who are committing crimes. Nevertheless, we hear that the young will not be deported and others, but it's not shaping up to look that way. And I think New York is courageous to do what they're doing.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Disdain for the Donald Trump presidency and the fear of the future it could bring have brought a variety of activist groups together. One group recently marched in Albany. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas attended the anti-KKK presidency rally in Townsend Park and filed this report.
Mobile fasting is disgusting.
Activists representing diverse social action groups ranging from Alliance for Quality Education to Pride Center of the Capital Region to Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood braved the cold Saturday afternoon to commiserate over the election. A press release issued by the coalition of more than 40 groups under the moniker the Capital District Coalition Against Islamophobia explained the rally was responding to the fact that the Ku Klux Klan announced a victory rally the same day in North Carolina. David Duke, former Grand Dragon of the KKK, was an early endorser of Trump. Albany activist and WAMC contributor Barbara Smith delivered opening remarks at the Albany rally.
The most common justification of African Americans for lynching was the protection of white womanhood from black men.
It had the feel of a 60s-style freedom rally. Addressing the crowd, Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan said that in 2008, the city passed a resolution welcoming immigrants. She said there should be no doubt New York's capital is indeed a sanctuary city, not only for all refugees, but for all who may feel or be displaced. She confirmed that anyone stopped by city police will not be questioned regarding legal status.
We need to keep doing. Get involved with RISE. Get involved in helping to welcome our immigrant and refugee families. Get involved in organizations that are fighting Islamophobia. Please stay involved. We need to fight now more than ever.
Shamshad Ahmad of Central Avenue's Masjid As-Salam Mosque warned of a nation divided in third world fashion under Trump.
One superior tribe and one inferior tribe.
Where some see division, others see war. Lawrence Whitner represents Peace Action, the largest grassroots peace organization in the United States.
With the election of Donald Trump and a Republican Congress, the biggest, most destructive military machine in world history, with over 7,000 nuclear weapons and $1 trillion nuclear weapons buildup underway, will be controlled by a zealously right-wing, nationalistic, racist government headed by a mentally unstable egomaniac.
Whatever the activists believe a Trump presidency might mean for minorities in Albany, Assad Hussein, an Albany High 11th grade student whose family escaped Aleppo 3 years ago, isn't worried. Speaking with assistance from UAlbany student Omar Al-Rifa, he said he has faith in his new country.
Assad isn't fearing the Trump presidency. He believes that people will be able to come together.
Hussein is concerned about those now stuck in Syria, that their chances for asylum may diminish under Trump. Some passersby misinterpreted the gathering as a protest against KKK activity in Albany. There is none to speak of, as far as we know. Tim DeRocher is with the Albany County Republican Committee.
Any, quote, endorsement from the KKK is something that is useless. It's meaningless. I cannot distance ourselves enough from them.
DeRocher suggests we all need to move forward in a positive direction. And for his part, President-elect Trump has said he wants to be a leader for all people. The crowd marched down Central Avenue from Townsend Park to Dana Park, where the event concluded with a secondary rally.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
An environmental group and organic farm in the Hudson Valley have filed a lawsuit against the New York State Public Service Commission. The two groups oppose state subsidies of upstate nuclear power plants. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
The PSC in August issued an order adopting the Clean Energy Standard, and the nuclear subsidy is one of the standard's three tiers. Beacon-based Hudson River Sloop Clearwater and Goshen Green Farms, an organic family farm near Middletown in Orange County, have filed a lawsuit against the PSC, arguing it acted improperly when it mandated the subsidy, called a zero-emission credit, to aid New York's upstate nuclear power plants. Manajo Green is Environmental Action Director at Clearwater and says it was important to escalate sheer opposition to legal action.
Clearwater feels it's important to challenge the nuclear subsidy in court because if unchallenged, this will go into effect as a mandatory $7.6 to $10 billion subsidy that New York ratepayers are going to have to pay over the next 12 years. And we felt that this plan needed to be stopped and reconsidered.
Attorney Susan Shapiro represents Clearwater and Goshen Green Farms.
So why should every New Yorker, be required to pay a surcharge to support this failing industry And by doing so, we're taking away money that can go to true renewables, especially for people and companies that have already invested in renewables, like Ocean Green and Clearwater. Now we're having we spent the money to go to non-nuclear energy. Now we're going to be paying a surcharge to support nuclear energy. It's like a double. It's a double payment.
Plus, says Shapiro,
the PSC is calling nuclear emission-free, and that is just factually wrong, incorrect, and we're suing on that.
Paul Stadler takes issue with that statement.
Well, the reality is there are no emissions from nuclear power plants. It's plain and simple. It just does not happen.
Stadler is spokesman for the New York Affordable Reliable Electricity Alliance, whose members include Entergy, parent company of the Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant in Westchester County, which could benefit from the subsidy down the road. A PSC spokesman in a statement says, quote, Clearwater's opposition to nuclear energy is based on ideology, not reality, and ignores the many benefits these upstate nuclear plants provide. Our zero-emission credit plan is a cheaper, sensible way to have the existing carbon-free nuke fleet serve as a bridge to renewables, as opposed to importing fracked gas and using dirty oil, end quote. Clearwater's Green says the lawsuit is of historic significance, demonstrating to the country that dollars should not be spent on nuclear power, but rather a fully renewable energy economy.
These aging facilities are neither clean nor safe. And to be subsidizing them is putting ratepayers' money in the wrong direction. The first two tiers of the so-called clean energy standard we strongly support. Tier 1 and Tier 2 provide subsidies for new and existing renewable energy.
Again, Stadler.
The reality is it's going to be about a 2% increase. And if the measure does not go through, there's going to be a lot more economic loss in terms of plants and jobs and communities getting funding for things like schools.
Meanwhile, the New York-headquartered Environmental Defense Fund has said it intends to intervene in a case and side with PSC Chair Audrey Zibelman. It's a lawsuit from the Coalition for Competitive Energy against Zibelman seeking to block the nuclear subsidy provision. The clean energy standard will require 50% of New York's electricity to come from renewable energy sources like wind and solar by 2030.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers denied the easement permit for the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Pipeline to cross under a Missouri River reservoir in southern North Dakota near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. The pipeline controversy has brought thousands of protesters to an encampment at Standing Rock. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports one Adirondack resident was at the encampment when the permit denial was announced.
While there was sun and blue skies Sunday at the Lakota Sioux Reservation, Adirondack Wild Friends of the Forest Preserve partner Dan Plumley reports that by Monday, temperatures had dropped to 20 degrees or less with 45-mile winds and a blinding snowstorm. Despite the conditions, thousands are at the encampment. Plumley arrived last Thursday to stand in unity with the Lakota Sioux, and he says underscore similar threats to the Adirondacks.
We are facing similar situations in the Adirondacks threatening our water from dirty bacon crude oil moving across old railroad tracks by the Hudson River, by Lake Champlain, incredible pristine, or nearly so, water sources. We face the same threat, in a sense, of our environment being destroyed. And I also went because I have spent a lot of time in my life working with Native Americans, and I just could not stand by while while they were being abused and disenfranchised of their right to peaceably assemble.
Plumlee has worked with indigenous peoples across the world. He was at the camp Sunday during the celebrations after the Army denied the permit for the pipeline to cross the Missouri River. He says while the decision is being cheered by those in the camp and Lakota Sioux leaders, there is also concern about the entire pipeline and uncertainty about any action the incoming Trump administration may take.
The decision of the Ocheti-Sackowan encampment is to stay on and sustain the effort and to continue to express their concerns about the entire Dakota Access Pipeline. They hope to carry forward and kill the project, kill the black snake, as they call it, because they don't feel it should be impacting or threatening the water and the health and the ecological integrity of any community.
Meanwhile, three groups in Vermont staged a protest Monday against a bank that invests in the Dakota Access Pipeline. Members of Central Vermont Climate Action, Central Vermont Showing Up for Racial Justice, and the Upper Valley Affinity Group disrupted TD Bank operations in Montpelier by blocking its drive-through or protesting inside the lobby. Solidarity Action Media Liaison Madeline Sherrow says continued action is crucial even after the pipeline permit was denied.
People were celebrating that decision and also understanding that it's just the beginning and there's so much more work to do and that decision could be revoked at any point. And so celebrating the victory and committed to continuing to see this through.
An extended conversation with Plumlee about his experience at the Standing Rock encampment is available at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1650. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at the same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.